Welcome back to Wine and Dining in Live with Anush. Our today's conversation is very exciting. It's about collecting wines, enjoying wines, and appreciating them. My guest is Michael, and he has been sharing with us how he got into the wine, how he got fascinated and taken away by all that it has to offer. And he began collecting, and not only collecting, but also, of course, enjoying and saving them. In the second part, I wanted Michael to see if we can, if you can, give a little bit of blueprint or maybe some ideas and suggestions to someone who wants to get into collecting the wines. What should they start with? And how to go about it?
I think it's as simple as I understand, you know, figuring out what you like.
Mm-hmm.
And what you like depends on your palate and your nose. So it's a little bit like, you know, if you have, some people have super palates, some people have ordinary palates, just like some people can have incredible voices mm-hmm. to sing. But even if you have a natural good voice, it helps training your voice. And any palate can train itself to some extent. It's about understanding what you like.
Mm-hmm.
So you start with that, I think. It's that simple. When you taste something, don't worry about what the label says. Do you like the wine? If you like the wine, maybe buy a bottle of it. Put it there, and next time you like a wine, you know, if you don't like it, also take note of that so you don't go, you know.
So journaling is important.
Yes, very much.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't, of course, it could mean different things to different people. Some people it's just in their head, some people need to
write it down. Yeah.
Writing it down is very helpful. So you start with that, and then little by little you build up. And but also pay attention to what the experts or the more experienced people, and try to find those who mentor you so that you develop that palate. It's mm-hmm. not as simple as like, well, I like this.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck there.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, you need to broaden your horizons. You need to learn from people. If so, you know, if you might taste a bitter taste, but that's actually maybe the stage that the wine is in, and you discount it, someone who has experience can tell you, look, that's what happens. That's a sign of quality, in fact. So it's a, you know, in some ways, some of it is acquired taste.
Mm-hmm. How do you find those people? For example, someone is really into the wine and they want to, you know, expand their horizons. How do they go to find someone to taste with?
I think it's the typical thing.
You find your group? I'm sure you have a group of people that you get together and enjoy and share wines and taste and discuss.
Yeah. Sometimes it's someone who sells you wine.
Okay.
And they sell to other people and they say, we're doing a tasting, come. But right now, I mean, this is 20 years ago, but with social media the way it is, you follow, there are people who are meeting on Instagram getting together.
We met on Instagram.
Tasting. Yeah, we met on Instagram, exactly. Now we're tasting.
Exactly.
So there are people, there is Meetup also, there are mm-hmm. groups in LA, certainly there's plenty of such groups. So you just kind of find your way around. One of the things I learned is that, you know, above wine, hang out with people you like. It's no fun drinking good wine with people you don't enjoy their company.
That's true.
So the best wine is not enjoyable with the wrong company. So that's how you build up, and be eager to learn. Don't settle on, oh, I like this and that's it. So, you know, I also don't think you should try to buy wine to as an investment, unless that's like you're an expert and that's your intent.
Mm-hmm.
Don't focus on that. Focus on, you know, on building up your knowledge. And
I was going to ask, some people look at the wine as an investment, and for those purposes, you said that you have to be knowledgeable to do that, to get into that, because it can be tricky, right? You can accidentally buy a fake wine. And then save it, and or what else can be
That's a whole different ball game, knowing what to buy at what prices and to sell. I'm not into that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I buy the drink. There are people who buy cases of wine.
Okay.
And clearly you're not going to, drink some. The traditional model used to be you buy two cases, drink one, sell one.
I see.
And have the one that you sold pay for the one, Yeah, you can do that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to get enough variety that way unless you go, put together 20,000 bottles. So, I think it should be more about variety, 2-3 bottles of something. But you do need to taste the wine at its different evolution points. And that's kind of part of the education. So 3 to 6 is a good number.
Of each wine to collect, save, to store.
Exactly.
What about the storage? For someone who just wants to start, would you suggest a wine refrigerator before they start allocating a whole room and putting in the coolant and etc., making into a cellar?
Yeah, before you go steal one of the bedrooms and turn it into a wine cellar.
As soon as the kids move out. Bye, kids!
I would get one of those small cellars, 50 bottles, 100 bottles, you can go to a few hundred bottles this way. You can add a second one. You may not know if you're going to want, racks or case storage. If you get really serious, case storage becomes more important, because wine intact in cases is typically the better thing to keep. Especially if you're considering long-term value. These are the considerations. Temperature control is extremely important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you have wines that are very early drinking, in fact, you could benefit from having them be at 65 degrees.
Are those? What are the ones that are early drinking?
Five-year, kind of a seven-year. I've done a lot of experimenting. You can keep, like right up here in the front, you can't see, but boxes like this contain wine. And this is what I call the fast-forward cellar. It's literally out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool enough here. It's about 65, 66 degrees here. And the wines do well for like 2-3 years. And they become much more drinkable. You notice sometimes when you go to a restaurant, the wine is tasting better.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're not really keeping it cold.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring it down to 55 or 53 degrees, which is what is inside there, 52 degrees,
mm-hmm.
The wine really slows down in its development. And it's not sensible to do that for wine where the drinking range is, 7 years. Keep it a little warmer and actually enjoy it sooner.
Yeah.
Above 65 degrees, which I've also experimented, the wine does not last long. At 70 degrees, you have a few months, a couple of months.
Wow, that fast.
Yeah.
And it
has damaging effects. At 75 degrees, you're really like on thin ice.
And that's pretty much everybody's, most of the people's home degree is 75.
Yeah.
So that's why people are asking, when they start getting into the wine, and regardless of, I guess, the price point, they buy the wine and they want to enjoy it for a couple of years, they always ask, should we buy a wine refrigerator? And based on what you said, it's suggested to have, at least a small one that you can save your wine. And because if you just took a trip to Napa Valley and you got 3 cases of wine, and those wines are not inexpensive, and if you keep them at the room temperature at home at 75, then you really have to drink them within a year. And some people like to hold them for a few years. So they need a refrigerator or a cooler or something
absolutely.
Like that.
I wouldn't keep wine at 75 degrees for a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. It also depends on the varietal. Pinot Noir is sensitive. Cabernet is hardier. Syrah is even hardier. Chardonnay is delicate. Champagne is very delicate. You definitely want to temperature control was. And humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Humidity is more important for the very the long term.
And why is it important?
Because the cork lets in tiny amount of air, and that's important for the life of the wine, actually. And then when the air goes out, when air comes, you know, basically there's evaporation. So the fill level goes down on your wine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this is assuming you keep it for many years.
Yeah.
But over 20, 30 years, you see wines that have like 3 inches down. So the cork lets up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the external humidity affects the health of the cork and how much of the wine is, how well the wine is kept inside.
Yeah.
And you want to be in, you know, some people say like 80%, that's really hard to do, but 40, 50, 60%,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, that's important. For wines that should be kept, like some of these high-end Bordeaux or mm-hmm. Burgundies, for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
you definitely want to consider. And don't worry about the labels, they will all wrinkle up. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
people get concerned about the label. Oh, my label is not pretty anymore.
Yeah.
Don't worry about that because mm-hmm. what do you want? A pretty label
or
a good
wine? Yeah. I guess that would be a concern for those people who would like to resell it. So they need to keep the label also intact.
Yes, we have even a less educated set of people out there who are spending big dollars on wine, and they're more concerned about the label condition. To me, it's the opposite. If I see a humidity affected label
mm-hmm.
Where the fill level is, you know, a quarter inch, and the wine is 30 years old, that's a really good sign.
Wow, that's a really good tip to know. Yeah. So what is typically, let's say someone, okay, they have bought a wine refrigerator or that has 100 to 200 bottles, they have outgrown it, and now they want to build a cellar. What does it take to build a cellar? Is there cellar companies? And what is the thought process? You know, we have to have the temperature control and the humidity in there, but what else is good to consider?
Consider the racks, consider the quantity. This is the number one tip. However many bottles you think your cellar needs to hold, you are basically off but probably by a factor of two. If you do well, you are gonna need more. You know, no one is, I know, has built a cellar and said, my God, I built it too big. So everyone...
It's,
you know,
usually the other way
it's
around.
It's the other way around. You're like, you know, like over here, there's like boxes piled up and I have no place to put them away.
Do you know how many... I mean, you should know. You have a... that's another question. Do you have a software that called keeps track on your wines and what you pull out and what's how old and how important is that?
Yeah, when I started, there wasn't good software. Since then, people have been using Cellar Tracker
mm-hmm.
and the other value that I think he's done over there is people put tasting notes, so you get tips on, you know, what's drinking well, what you should wait on. So I did my own spreadsheet. And I got carried away on that, actually. So it can, you know, take my entire cellar and tell me what to drink from the first bottle to the last bottle and when. When is a difficult challenge. But I think you have to consider the drinking range
mm-hmm.
for the wines. And Cellar Tracker is probably the best tool out there. I
mm-hmm.
have no vested interest in Cellar Tracker, and actually I don't use it.
Yeah, you use your own.
Well, you know, I do use my own. I realize the serendipity is the most important factor. So I go back there and I grab something like, I had no idea I had this, and that makes it fun.
But is it in your spreadsheet?
Well, the spreadsheet's 5 years old, so yeah, so that's what I mean by serendipity. At least it's a good excuse.
Oh, but I think it is. It's. I mean, it's important to have the tracker because in case you bought a bunch of wine that it's ready to drink.
Yes.
then it means you need to, it's time to call your friends and have a party and invite them all over and say, okay, all these wines are ready, let's drink them.
It's always time to call your friends. But you do run into like some old bottle. I had a Cuvée Kathleen vineyard of Kistler Chardonnay that I found the other day. It was 20 years old and it's apricots.
How was it?
Now. You know, a little too dense.
Okay.
You're welcome to taste it. It's sitting up there. I'm not sure what to do with it.
Sure. Why not? Well, I mean, I'm really enjoying.
One note, if I may add, about the label condition.
Yes.
Not every beat up label is a good sign. It's actually, that is something to consider. If a great wine has been abused, it would be apparent in both the label and the capsule and even the glass itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's been traded heavily, shipped around a lot, and so on. Which brings me to an important point, and that is shipping. So as the old adage goes, garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have the perfect cellar at the best temperature and the humidity level, but if it got cooked on the way in, during shipment, and you put it in the cellar and you don't know, you find out 20 years later that it's, you know, it's cooked and it's not going to improve. So that is a very important, you know, how do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm. How do you prevent that?
How do you prevent that? Don't ship during the hot times.
Okay, so during the summer, do not order wine. And
You can order them. A lot of people will keep it for you until an appropriate time to ship.
Mm-hmm.
And when they ship, insist on proper somewhere in the country it's hot, or too cold actually, it can freeze.
That's
as well.
True. Yes.
So either direction is bad. I make sure all my wine is temperature controlled door to door. Because all too often you taste the wine, and I've developed actually a taste for cooked wine.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell it's cooked, and you wonder why it's doing what it's doing. That's important.
That is very important. Yeah, because like you said, you're going into all this work, building your cellar, spending so much money, and then putting in bad wine and waiting for 20 years for it to become even worse.
You open it for that special occasion.
Yeah.
Yeah, only to be disappointed.
Yeah. So, well, this is wonderful. I'm sure that, you know, our listeners have been enjoying this conversation, and it actually answers a lot of questions. There is a really cool thing that I saw in your cellar. I don't think we talked about it. And it's for earthquake.
Yes.
How did the, is it part of it, or you came up with this idea?
Well, I wanted to have earthquake protection, and of course we're in California. It's really interesting to go to France and see these cellars with the bottles that are just piled up on each other and nothing happens. But here in California, we got to protect against it. There are a lot of ways to do it. This one was both a combination of fun and a unique design, where you have a rod that actually, comes off the rack, and then you push it up to the side and then get your wine and put it back. So that was, my design. I had a wonderful iron worker do it. But there are simpler ways like foam and net, there are rings people can put around the neck of the wine so it won't come out.
I see, yeah.
There are a lot of concoctions out there. Of course, if you keep it in a case, that's a lot safer too, but then it's kind of harder to access. Don't go collect wine and not protect it.
Which brings me to one more question about protection. What about insurance?
Yeah, insurance can get very expensive. The rates can be like 1-2% of the value that you want to insure. Definitely insure your wine, especially if it's off premises, then your home insurance may not cover it, or you find out that you have limits to what your home insurance will cover, or your deductible, et cetera, the typical things you would consider.
Yeah.
A lot of home insurances would covered it as an asset,
something
as a,
to consider.
Something that's in the house, yes.
Yeah.
Especially if they're of value, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, not you won't insure some wine that's, you know, $25-$30. One more question. What about if you don't want to save the wine in your house or your home? Are there any other options? Can you rent a place? Is there like cellar, like places that you can rent to store your wine?
Oh, absolutely. Wine lockers are out there throughout the, you know, Southern California. There's the LA Fine Art and Wine Storage. There's the Wine House. Sage Society is a good place. Liz over there does a great job, very meticulous. Terminal 55 and Van Nuys has wonderful cages. And then you don't have to worry about the temp control. You don't mm-hmm. have to worry about the humidity backup systems.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things to consider, actually, if you put it in your home, keep it in a place where if the power were to go out, your wine isn't going to cook. And because one day it will go out in the middle of summer, or, you know, or your unit, you may want to have a backup unit, but that's impractical sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's better to keep it at a place where, like right down here,
mm-hmm.
even if the, you know, it's gone, power's out, it's not going to get, you know, warmer
yeah.
than 65 degrees, so the wine won't be damaged. So that's important too.
Wonderful. Well, Michael, thank you so much for this very interesting conversation full of lots of knowledge. I learned a lot about how and what to do if I want to get into collecting in our household. Unfortunately, the wine doesn't stay longer than 1 month.
That's a good thing.
We always, and my friends always joke, they when they come over, they're like, what wine do you have? I'm like, I have just this and this. And like, how come you have just so little? I'm like, because we drink it. We always like, whatever we get, we drink it with friends. And I always believe that, you know, the wine needs to be shared, just like you said, with friends. And that's best way to enjoy. Thank you so much for, again, for sharing your knowledge. And till next time, maybe we can talk more if there's more questions that our viewers have.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.